Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and Dancing, just shut the fuck up. And with me, I have...
Oh wow, crazy Uncle Racist Uncle Ted got COVID. I'm not surprised.
And...
Oh, and add on that? Ha ha!
If only it got to him, like, just so close. It's always so close when you hear about an asshole getting COVID, and yet, damn it.
Yeah.
There's always the assholes that survive, unfortunately.
Now, if only he could hit Danzig. Or any of those New York hardcore assholes. You know the ones.
Yeah.
Fucking, we're doing a 9/11 benefit show, my left ass cheek.
What?
It's May! Jesus.
Aren't they for, like, 4 months?
Look, math isn't their specialty. I mean, four is a big number clearly. For some people. But anyway, here we are, episode 219. So how's everyone's past week or so been going?
It's been good. I am currently in week 3 of my doing 2 shows a week because of scheduling stuff. It's been a long, arduous process, but I'm getting there. And in between, you know, doing a whole bunch of recording and editing and, you know, just trying to get all that done. Time for the At the Movie segment, because I saw the 2 biggest movies in the country, and it didn't cost me a dime. I saw the new Mortal Kombat, which, honestly, I liked the first one better. I don't know what it is, but this one just felt like it was just trying to be a build-up to a much better movie in, like, 2 years, and I don't like that.
Oh, it's one of those, eh?
We should expect more from these movies than just being moments of gratuitous fan service for the sake of it.
And basically that.
Yeah. But I also got to see the Demon Slayer movie on my PS4, and it didn't cost me a dime. Y'all might have heard about that, but the movie got accidentally put up for purchase on the PSN store on PS4. I bought it and watched it. And then they took it away, but I got my money back. So I got to see it, and it didn't cost me anything. They didn't happen to give me my money back, but, you know, they did, because obviously they just took the movie back. But, suck on that, Aniplex. It didn't cost me a dime to see your biggest movie ever.
Of all the things that I was hoping would completely slip through the cracks, I didn't get a chance to watch it myself because I was waiting to watch it with someone, and someone at Sony noticed before that could happen. Best start of those.
Yeah, unfortunately, that they caught wind of it a little too... actually, not too soon. It was up for, like, 24 hours, but, you know, whatever. And besides that, it's just been more the usual. Weekends still suck because everyone likes to go out and have big fucking parties all over the place. Don't ask what I have to deal with. It's just a lot of mess.
Yeah. Yeah, that sucks. Anyway, Mark, what about you?
Well, like you asked, I have to see a new movie this weekend. That being on Netflix. Yeah, you heard that movie, The Mitchells vs. the Machines, that one movie from the two writers from Gravity Falls and, of course, Lord and Miller, and, as expected, it was good. I liked it. Very, very, it's very spontaneous and wacky and all that shit, basically. You basically on the chance, like, all right, I like this, and it's actually got a charm personality to it. And also, you got another scene where Eric Andre, who's from the voices, with this guy caught by one of them phones, and one of them say, "Okay, you see something about him?" It's like, Why should we care about these humans? What you got? I got the power of love. He gets kicked in. He get kicked in the balls or legs. Whatever. It's like it's kind of funny.
Do 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 do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Even though that's not the only thing I saw on Netflix, I'd rather save that for another time.
Another time.
But y'all know what I saw. But yeah, let's leave it at that. Y'all know me.
Stay tuned, children.
Indeed, indeed. Anyway, as for me, well, the only thing of note that happened besides, you know, finding out I passed the class that I was taking this past semester was I got my second COVID shot. And good thing I was allowed to call out of work the next day, because God fucking damn it.
Yeah, it'll do that to you.
I did not get an ounce of sleep that night. Like you couldn't have waited to hit me with the side effects until after I woke up? That's just not fair, man.
Now you know how I felt during the April roundup. I was tired as shit.
Yeah, it's just... It is it hits, but like, you know, it dissipates after like a day, if you're willing to rest and, you know, Tylenol and all. Wow, that was a tongue twister.
Oh boy, and now, and I guess I'm prepared because I get mine the next, two weeks from Sunday, which, oh boy.
Good luck with that, Mark. But yeah, that's about it on my end. And with all of that intro stuff out of the way, time to move on to, of course, our usual business, starting with the new song discussions for the past week. As always, there will be a playlist down in the description so you can follow along, pick up some new tunes, and anticipate some new albums. Or just listen to individual songs, depending on whether or not there's an album. You know, it's always a whole thing. So, anyway, starting right at the top here, Black Midi rolling out their second full-length album, Cavalcade, on May 28th. Even announcing a tour for later on in the year around fall. You know, optimistic on their end, but we shall see. And so we have the second single here from the album titled Slow, which it is certainly not slow because, again, this band's always got a lot of spastic energy to them, even in the songs that might be more relatively melodically inclined. Like, there's kind of this soft volume freeform jazz thing going on through, like, a lot of it with the rapid drum sticking patterns, the bass chord progressions, and the guitar is having, like, these clean, like, wacky, noodly melodies and rhythms. The vocals themselves being very, like, softly spoken, not even, like, the manic spoken word stuff of, like, the previous single that we got. It does, you know, try to soften things up a bit more with that bridge, which has more of this jazz fusion thing going on. But then, of course, it swells more and more with tons of, like, you know, horns that are just penetrating their way through the mix, you know. Still something somewhat melodious to an extent while having a lot of the expected Black Midi noisy eccentricities.
So this turned out to be some of the strangest jazz fusion I've heard in a while, with extra emphasis on all those bombastic accents and all those ba-bom, ba-boms. Like, it's just right up there, right in your ear holes.
Yeah, this is super fucking weird. That's all I gotta say. This is a genuine weird vibe, though.
Yep. Anyway, moving on to the next track here, something that's a little bit more comprehensible. Actually, vastly more comprehensible. So, Red Fang, a stoner rock band, putting out their new album Arrows on June 4th. We have the second single here, Funeral Coach. And it's got a bit more of an energy to it than, you know, the previous title track we got. Writing this nice, like, driving groove with some offbeat syncopations and rhythmic timing here and there. Just, you know, busting out a lot of those satisfying, like, fuzzy, gritty stoner riffs. Those nice, filthy bass grooves to complement the track. It is a simple jam, but a satisfying one nonetheless.
So, have you ever wanted to hear what a waltz by Corrosion of Conformity sounds like? It would be something like this, with grooving 6-8 beats and riffs all throughout with a strong pulse to carry its meaty and flat-out gnarly tone. But yeah, the way the 6-8 groove pattern just goes through, that's a waltz. That is a waltz groove. I would know.
Ah, waltz. Anyway, so with that out of the way, moving on to the next track here, which is a collaboration between Mr. $7 McDonald's meal, Travis Scott, and some guy named Baby Keem. Oh boy, more rapping babies.
Wait, you remember Baby Keem? He was on the WXL freshman list?
Which one?
Last year's 2021. The guy said that's because of King Lamar.
Huh. Well, I guess this is what I get for forgetting, like, more than just two of any given freshman class at a time.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah, I don't blame you, to be honest. Because I put on a different cast that name. Anyway, speaking of this guy, yeah, new album coming out. I don't know when. So, they both have a new song called Durag Activity. And I say this is something. Rebecca S's voice is very low, like almost sort of. I don't want to say mumbling, but more like, well, okay, I don't want to say, it, but it's kind of close to that. I don't want to say mumbling because it's kind of close to that. It's like money, conquest, and all that shit. Like, I think the thing is interesting was the video, to be honest, because they got people chasing motherfuckers all around, and maybe can go in somebody's house, get tired of Travis Scott for some reason, and there be old dudes with guns and shit. It's like, okay, kind of like you're the beer ball to the song. I mean, the song is, it's not bad. It's just like, it's like, listen to it, but okay. It's like, and then with Travis Scott's part, you get the usual shit. You get the ad libs, you get all that shit you give him. Which honestly, that part seems more livelier than what Baby Keem brought me. To be honest, because it seems like, and looking at this part is between like, again, this is the thing that we have that we forgot. It's on a record label called PG Lang. That's a somewhat media company between Dave Free and Kendrick Lamar, we're gonna keep it at this point, but yeah.
This is the most mediocre song about do-rags I've ever heard. It's no Dragon Ball do-rag. But anyway, moving on to the next track here. So, coming out in a couple of weeks, for some reason, because this franchise is still going on, we're getting Spiral from the Book of Saw on May 14th, which, I'm sorry, wasn't this series over by, like, the sixth one? Or, like, the seventh? Like, I'm pretty sure the main dude, like, the main character villain, like, died by, like, part four or five. And at this point, they've cycled through, like, what? Three of his disciples continuing, however this works. I don't know. Saw continuity is weird.
Well,
but this time,
I actually have something to say about that, so I'm just looking here, because Chris Rock is in the movie, and apparently this movie came about from a meeting with the head of Lionsgate at a friend's wedding, and they wanted to do something a little different for him, and apparently this was it.
I guess so. We shall see.
And also, here's Samuel Jackson as one of the, I guess, victims? Or something, because like, oh shit, how you gonna get out of this?
People are gonna say how there's a deeper meaning to all this, like those fucking Purge movies, when, no. These movies are just dumb gore fests. Just admit you like dumb gore fests, people.
So, as always, to be expected with these things, there's of course a tie-in movie soundtrack, because there always is, and apparently the soundtrack is being produced to some extent by Mr. 21 Savage. You know, Saw 4 had X-Japan, this has 21 Savage for some reason. Okay. So, of course, we have a song from the soundtrack. I'm assuming this will be the end credits theme. It's called Spiral, of course. And beat-wise, it's just, it's a basic trap beat, mostly overlaid with a lot of samples from, like, the main recurring title theme of the franchise. It's just him rapping about how much badass of a gangster he is, how much he's going to kill you. You know, I took a number two with my rifle, which I'm guessing is supposed to be a Second Amendment pun, but I'm literally just imagining him taking a massive shit while holding a rifle and just shooting the wall next to him for reasons. I don't know. This song just kind of feels like it's whatever. Even, like, as far as, like, ending, you know, end credits songs, it's just kind of there. Although I will admit, keep the baloney, I'm just here for the bread, is kind of a funny line.
Yeah. Okay, well, the past years of 21, I have slept on him, like, I think he's I don't think he's, like, top tier. He's like, you know what, he's, like, listenable to me. Like, this track is, and I can listen to it, like, does pull that? Does pull that horror movie track? The horror movie sound kind of right with that. And well, I mean, yeah, there is a bit of the same, but I could do worse.
I guess, but you could also do better. Again, X Japan. That theme was so good. Anyway, moving on to even more mediocrity. So, in the year of our Lord, 2021, evidently we are going to have to deal with the reunited lineup of one of the biggest memes of the bad old days of my high school years. That being Attack Attack, wait for it, 1! Nobody gives a shit about the 2! Attack Attack. So, where have these guys been for, you know, the past decade or so? Last you remember, they released This Means War in 2012, which dropped the lame synth shit and was just more standard-ass metalcore, which technically made it their best album, but not by much. After dissolving in the year or so afterwards, frontman Caleb Shomo moved on to Beartooth, where he's currently still with, leaving the band to reunite with just original members Andrew Wetzel on drums and Andrew Whiting on lead and rhythm guitars. So, to fill in the rest of the lineup, new to, you know, the reunion is Jay Miller on bass and vocalist Chris Parketney, who previously sang in the band Nine Shrines, which, oddly enough, was founded by Wetzel himself during AA's hiatus. And so they've dropped a couple songs here and there. Well, I think one song and then some bullshit-ass teaser for something called Kawaii Cowboys, which I accidentally almost included in an episode a while back until it turned out, oh wait, this is just 46 seconds of nonsense, so we're not obligated to talk about it by any means. I mean, technically we're not obligated to talk about this one either, but it is technically a song, so whatever. Just to pretty much poke the bear, they have this new song out called Brachyura Bombshell. If you're wondering what Brachyura is, it is the scientific classification for crabs. Get it? Crab core. Please don't drag science into your lame jokes. So, good news about this track. The synth work that is here is marginally less obnoxious here than in their heyday, just being a mild accentuation instead of full-blown rave bullshit. Bad news, it is just the kind of generic metalcore chugging and cliche-ass anthemic choruses that I thought we all agreed we left behind in, like, 2014, 2013, whatever time frame you want to put it there. Like, this is just a song that takes up space. Why?
I'm not too thrilled about the synth work on here. It sounds kind of phoned in. It's not a total deal breaker, but it's just there. The comic book style video is kind of amusing, but don't quit your day job in Beartooth, Caleb. You're not missing out on anything here, and this time, yes, we can blame the mixing on Joey Sturgis.
Knew it.
Sturgis. I don't have much else to say about this except it exists. And whatever happened to their bass player who left in 2012 and posted the most insane stream of consciousness thing ever? Whatever happened to that guy?
I don't friggin' know. I didn't make a note of it. The day I start caring about what happens with the original bassist of Attack Attack is the day I give up on existence.
Ugh. So, yeah, that was a thing.
Anyway, speaking of things that technically exist, so, y'all remember Treyu Kids?
No.
Yeah, neither do I. I honestly only ever heard, like, two fucking songs from them. Who cares? Apparently, someone does, because they are dropping a brand new album June 4th called Baptize. And, yeah, we have a new song from them here called Catastrophe. Oh my god, there's no way they fucking teed themselves up for that. That is way too easy. So easy, I don't even want to make the obvious joke right here, but, like, god damn, just... It's like, you know, people aren't going to like this because it freaking, like, okay, so, yeah, speaking of obnoxious synths, that goddamn intro thing just pissed me off, and, I mean, this is just generic radio hard rock nonsense that, again, makes me wonder why the hell Atreyu was even still around, what are they even offering, but, what really grates on me here is the freaking vocals. Like, I know Atreyu's got, like, a bizarre-ass vocal dynamic that I think is a bit more streamlined now because of fucking, whatever the fuck the original dude's name was, Alex something or other, left, like, a while back, and the bassist is still doing the unclean vocals while their original drummer ditched the drums and took up pure clean vocals, you know, for the band as a whole, but god, that man just cannot sing at all. And I swear to fucking god, the vocal melody in the chorus, I've heard that somewhere before. Maybe it's because it's so generic, it could remind me of a million and one other Hot Topic staples. But I know I've heard that in a song before, and it's driving me fucking nuts. Which I suppose should be a compliment, because it's the only thing that has my attention about this fucking pile of nothing.
Yeah, I have definitely not thought about Atreyu since like 2007, with that one song that was in Madden 08, and... Here were my questions when I first heard this song. Didn't the singer used to be the drummer, and there was another singer? Who's the new drummer, and what's with the chorus being totally detached from the rest of the song here? Why is the breakdown here totally generic chunk core? What have I missed from this band in the last 13 years? And the answer is clearly not much, because, God, the freaking attack breakdown hit harder than this one. It's just... and yeah, the chorus does sound kind of generic. It's a very, very generic four-chord structure you've heard in, like, a thousand other songs. But I'd still rather talk about this than freaking Attila and their repugnant crunkcore bullshit.
Being in a band that I have no idea how they're still fucking around.
They're just around for attention. And thankfully, we were not going to give him attention except for that one time because of memes.
Yeah. But thankfully, with that nothingness out of the way, we can finally wash the taste out of our mouths with something good. And
yes!
Yeah, first time we actually get to talk about this band on the podcast. So, yeah. Spirit Box. You've no doubt heard of them, you know, on the up and up in the past handful of years. Formed in 2016 by the husband and wife duo of Courtney LaPlante and Mike Stringer. Previous to this, they were the vocalist and guitarist of I Wrestled the Bear Once respectively. Bleh. Speaking of band names you probably haven't thought about in forever. That was a really fucking weird band. I kind of dug them. So, yeah, they've been dropping a good handful of singles, two EPs, with, of course, 2020. Can I talk? Being their big breakthrough year with the Holy Roller, you know, getting all the attention and whatnot. So, we have now here their first single that they dropped this year. And if the wording of the press release accompanying this is to be believed, there could finally be that much anticipated full length on the horizon, you know, coming sooner than we expected. They called this, I believe, to be exact, a very late studio edition, which means it's probably like a last minute thing they wanted to throw on an album, I assume. So yeah, the single we have here is called Circle With Me, and holy shit, a band that actually knows how to do, like, you know, good metalcore chugging that actually has a satisfying oomph and some sort of decent rhythmic construction to it. Gotta love that production, giving it that nice saturated hit. The verse relying more on the bass and drums with kind of minimal melodic guitars, and of course, Courtney's melodic vocals penetrating through the music in a very, sort of 2003 Amy Lee-ish kind of way. It's worth noting that among the band's many influences, LaPlante cites Tesseract, which is appropriate because listening to the chorus, the rhythmic structure, and the melodic cadences honestly feel a lot like last two albums era Tesseract, and holy shit, a breakdown that actually slams pretty goddamn hard. Now, where's that new album? Don't keep us waiting any longer.
Well, if Jose Mangan is to be believed, the album will probably be coming out in the fall. I know because he mentioned that on the Devil's Dozen show on Liquid Metal last weekend. So, you know, fingers crossed for that. And, yeah, I have gotten so much deeper into this band over the past several months. They're always on rotation on Liquid Metal, and the singles they put out have been just fantastic. Holy Roller, yes, and Constance. They're, like, up there. And this track is a bit more atmospheric with the bass and drum grooves carrying the verses with Courtney's vocals. It sounds like whoever was in charge of production took some tips from Nolly with how to work more ambient elements with the bass tone and the drum reverb. Sounds great. And then it goes into that chorus with the heavy guitar riffs and the refrain of "It could all be yours." And then that bridge and breakdown hit hard. Oh, God. Yes. Oh, this band always puts me in such a good mood. And I cannot wait for that album to come out. It's up there on top with like some other albums that I'm really looking forward to this year. Oh, it's so good.
So very good. But now we move on from the new to the old with some metal veterans over here. At the Gates, the Swedish Melodic Death Act will be releasing their newest album, The Nightmare of Being, on July 2nd. So we have the lead-off single from the album here, Spectre of Extinction. You know, I do love myself some At the Gates, so hell yeah, let's go. So the album, well, the song, rather, opens on a good minute or so of build-up. That first minute or so mixing in, you know, that hard-hitting, you know, Swedish metal death sound with some nylon acoustic strings, you know, here and there in between the major parts before, like, building up into that kind of really intense, you know, gritty songwriting with, like, the tremolo guitar leads, the fucking rapid, you know, pounding DB drums and all that. It's got everything you would expect from a good At the Gates song. The production kind of having a similar kind of dinginess to their previous full length To Drink from the Night Itself. And of course there's a pretty banging solo here, courtesy of Andy LaRocque, guitarist of King Diamond, who is apparently producing the record as well. If there's maybe a tiny bit of a weak point, it would be with Thomas Lindberg's vocals. They don't sound bad, they just sound maybe like a little bit off, like they don't maybe cut as hard as they did on that last full length. Maybe that's just me being nitpicky. Either way, I'm still liable to check this one out. At the very least, it's going to bring a certain minimum level of aggressively gnarly heavy shit.
Okay. Classical guitar harmonies isn't how I thought this song would start, but it does lead into something pretty strong and solid. A lot of majestic guitar lines to serve as a natural conflict for the heavier riffs. The structure is throwing me off a bit, though. It has about 90 seconds of instrumental build, and then it just goes hard and blistering fast for the rest of the song. It feels like the intro was supposed to be for a much longer song. This is only like about 4.5 minutes. When I get, like, a 90-second intro, I'm expecting a song to go, like, you know, 6 or 7 minutes. I don't know, it's just throwing me off a little bit.
Yeah, it'd be like that sometimes. But, you know, I'm still interested. Now, to move on to the next track here, I guess people decided that this was worth talking about in some capacity. So, Willow Smith had a new song out this past week. Honestly, haven't heard a thing from her since Whip My Hair back in 2010. Although, to be fair, I don't think most people have either. Like, just glancing at, like, her discography page on Wikipedia, specifically the charting information, wow. It's amazing that for how big of a song that one was, the disparity is huge. Like, fuck all of anything else she's done had ever charted or sold at all. Which is kind of weird considering you'd think the clout of the Smith family would help somewhat. I guess people were too busy paying attention to fucking Neo Yokio. I haven't forgotten, Jaden. But, yeah, so she's got a new song out, and apparently she decided she's going to go pop punk on this one because she recruited, you know, Travis Barker, which, okay, music industry. We all need to have a little bit of a talk here. Just as a quick question, you do know that there are other drummers in this world than Travis Barker, correct? Like, not just in the realm of pop punk, but just in general. There are other drummers, whether they be big names or maybe just aspiring session musicians who are looking for a big break. There are other drummers. Travis Barker, not even that good of a drummer, to be honest. He's average. I bet y'all the only reason he has that clout is because all y'all are still creaming your jeans from that fucking mediocre-ass Soulja Boy cover he did back in freaking 2007. Guys, fucking A.
Clearly, Joss Fries was not available because he's probably recuperating from work with Danny Elfman over the last several months.
Oh, God, that album's gonna be wild. But, whatever, that was just my obligatory, you know, music industry take for the week. So, okay, pop-punk track from Willow Smith and Travis Barker called Transparent Soul. And you know what? I'm going to try and be fair here. I mean, it's full well possible maybe she grew up into a not entirely annoying, you know, pop act of some kind when no one was looking. After all, Rebecca Black dropped Friday the year afterward, got really popular for being annoying and hated, and apparently at some point when we weren't looking, at least if you respect the opinions of people like Fantano, she apparently became an okay pop singer. I think. Like I said, I'd have to listen to be sure. So, Transparent Soul, okay, this is fine. This song isn't terrible or anything. It's nothing special, but for what it is, it's a perfectly serviceable pop-punk jam, and truth be told, Will Smith ain't that bad in this style of music. Like, it's very much a decidedly, like, mid-2000s pop-punk emo joint, and she's kind of got, like, this Hayley Williams-ish sort of vibe going on in her performance. It's alright. Nothing special, but it's not a disaster, like I assume most people would expect from hearing Willow Smith does pop-punk. That's just my takeaway.
But you forget that the Smiths does have a lot of musicality in their jeans. Like, you forgot that Mama wasn't a rock band.
Oh yeah, Jada Pinkett was in a new metal band.
I'll touch on that in a moment.
Yeah, we should not do EDM like, well, her daddy.
Die lit.
We forgot about that, or whatever the hell Jaden's doing. I don't know what the fuck he's doing.
Well, this sure is different. I'll give it that. The video gives me some Michael and Janet Jackson Scream vibes with how it's shot. I like the St. Vincent signature guitar being used, but the rest of it's just unspectacular. Travis Barker contributes nothing besides the brand name to this track, and on the chorus, Willow, turn the volume down on your microphone. You're clipping. Not in a good way. Like, you know, clipping. Your audio is clipping. It's peaking. It's not good. And look, this is going to sound mean, but hear me out. Outside of Jada, how can nobody in this family know how to sing? I'm sorry, but go listen to Jada Pinkett Smith's band, Wicked Wisdom. She's got some great vocal talents to her. She can carry herself. She has stage presence, and she can growl like the best of them. Go watch some of their performances from, like, Download Festival 2006. Fantastic stuff. The rest of the family cannot carry a note to save their lives. Not Willow. Not Jaden, or especially Will. I'm sorry, you may rap well, but you can't sing. Carry a note. Learn what pitch is. Because I'm hearing this song. Vocals are just... She's trying, but I'm not hearing it stay in right where it's supposed to be. And, you know, credit for not using autotune. That would have been a cheap way out. But there's an easier way to get away with not using autotune. It's learning how to sing. It's learning about pitch and melody and all that other bull crap we learn in music theory classes.
I wonder if that's why she's trying to dress like she's all nu metal and shit in the video, to channel her mom's essence.
Again, you gotta know how to carry your pitch.
But with that strange tangent out of the way, now we can get to the last song, and presumably the big one that is going to be all anyone gives a shit about for the past week or so.
Oh, yeah.
Because, of course, as always, the Billie Eilish hype train simply does not stop, whether it be random disconnected singles, or the documentary, or composing for a movie that isn't even out yet. I'm sorry, I'm not going to let that one go. So, yeah, of course, we finally got the big announcement that everyone was waiting for, as music superstar Billie Eilish will drop her second full-length album on July 30th, titled Happier Than Ever. Which, I'm assuming, is at least partly ironic, because it's Billie Eilish. Have you heard her music? So, yeah, we have, with that album announcement, we of course have a formal single to accompany it called Your Power, which, not gonna lie, feels like it's more of a album deep cut than it would be a single proper, like, you know, Therefore I Am, because this one is a very, like, stripped down acoustic ballad, you know, very straightforward in its instrumentation, mostly so it could focus in on the lyrics, which are, you know, about abusive relationships, apparently inspired by one that she was in with some asshole rapper named 7AMP when she was around, like, 16. And, of course, the lyrics are, you know, written just vague enough so that it's not explicitly about her, just, you know, about the broader dynamics of abuse in these relationships, like, you know, abuse of power, you know, ruining people over the course of, you know, years, the questionable age dynamics, singing with that kind of vagueness to keep the themes universal and everything. It's a good ballad. She sings well. The lyrics are, you know, they are effective the way that they are. Again, maybe this is more deep cut than single material, but it certainly, you know, gets your attention. I mean, of course we're going to check out the album. It's friggin' Billie Eilish. Why wouldn't we?
There weren't most of my notes for this track, but yeah, for anyone who saw The World's a Little Blurry, like I did, one of the big elements of the film is Billie's relationship with 7AMP, a.k.a. Q, as said in the movie, and how their relationship fell apart due to some, as she says in the film, self-destructive behavior. And this song alludes to that with the motif of "Would you abuse your power" ringing all throughout. And, yeah, that was through 2019. She was 16. He was 22.
Oh.
Yeah. Unfortunately, stuff like that is way more common than you'd think. The human species is a very complicated one. But yeah, as a whole for the song, as it's diving into clearly some very, you know, real deep-cutting emotions from her. Yeah, this song hits really hard, but it's also just a really good atmospheric acoustic ballad, and I think we can rest easy with this next album not falling into the sophomore slump, because with this song being as strong as it is, that posted a very good sign for the album when it drops, because it will have Therefore I Am and My Future on there, which are both phenomenally strong songs in their own rights. Oh, this album's gonna hurt. Yeah, I know. This is gonna hurt real good.
I guess in future, all three album discussion or whatever.
Possibly.
Very well could be. We'll just have to wait until July comes along. Just a few more months. And with all of that out of the way, that finishes the new song discussion. We're gonna take a break, and when we come back, there will of course be the news topic, so stay tuned. And And we're back. First up, I have come to the conclusion that we on this podcast probably officially need a fuck around and find out alarm. Because apparently, some people in this world do not seem to understand the memo, or that the protocol is always in full effect at all times. Case in point, y'all know about Rings of Saturn, right? One of the most obnoxious and annoying as hell bands in the metal sphere today. They just seem to always get in trouble for this or that reason. I remember the first time I ever heard about this band was because of the great controversy in 2012 when they were accused of recording studio parts in halftime and then speeding them up on the official album. Not to mention, apparently they have been accused of several other things, from miming the guitar parts in videos to pretending to play guitar at live shows while, while the officially tracked parts were, you know, filtered through the PA system. Even being accused of plagiarism, you know, stealing riffs from other musicians. That was a whole thing.
Wow, dude.
Either way, Rings of Saturn, or more precisely, musician Lucas Mann, the official ringleader of the group, just always gets into trouble, and he always has some pithy, smart-ass response about how it's always the reporting of the blogs, oh, it's Metal Sucks' fault, blah, blah, blah. But, you're not exactly gonna talk your way out of this one now, at least not without some extremely skilled, gift game, cause they have officially been dropped by their label Nuclear Blast. And according to the statement that they put out, quote, Nuclear Blast has a long-standing history of supporting its artists, treating them with the utmost respect and integrity. This included, past tense, Lucas Mann and Rings of Saturn. Nuclear Blast is proud to provide this support and strives to make all its artists feel comfortable that they have a transparent, honest relationship with their label. Sadly, Lucas Mann, on behalf of Rings of Saturn, has brazenly threatened to issue public statements condemning Nuclear Blast in the strongest possible terms if the label does not give in to his baseless demands. While Nuclear Blast is truly shocked and saddened by Lucas Mann's actions, Nuclear Blast also does not tolerate threats. Accordingly, Rings of Saturn have been dropped from the label.
Oh, boy.
So, translation... They fucked around and found out.
I would like to point out for the record, this news came Friday. We're recording this on Monday night, and amazingly, if he did put out a statement, I haven't seen it. But otherwise, I'm just assuming he's made no comment on the matter, which, given that it's Lucas Mann, you'd figured he'd be chomping at the bit to run his mouth about all this.
Yeah, this is a very new, possibly developing situation. We don't have a whole lot to go for here. Neither side have really said anything about it. But, don't go to music school, kids. Because when you go to music school, you learn about music labels, and you learn about how they operate. And 9 times out of 10, music labels often are involved in some kind of shady shit. See, Sumerian with their weird stuff involving Between the Buried and Me and how they basically had falling out with Periphery. Look at Victory Records with some of the stuff they've done, namely with They Don't Remember. And 100 different stories from 100 different labels. Now, what I'm saying is on my behalf, so if anyone out there is listening, just know this is my saying, and mine alone. Nuclear Blast has always given me a very off feeling. There's just something about this label that always irks me. I don't know what it is, but they always seem to pick up big bands because they pride themselves as the world's biggest metal independent label. But when they get big bands, those bands usually end up ending. Take, for instance, they got Slayer. They picked up their last album, and it was their last album.
Ew.
They picked up Children of Bodom, which was great because they got the back catalog, which was awesome for re-releases after they left Spinefarm. And then look what happened with Children of Bodom. Then there's Machine Head. Do I have to say what happened to Machine Head? I don't know what it is. I don't know if there's a correlation and causation effect going on here, but this label has always given me a very off feeling with how they present themselves. And because of that, I mean, every now and then they'll put out a good album. I know they have, you know, Meshuggah on their label. That's always cool. Well, then there's Opeth, whom they picked up after they left Roadrunner after Pale Communion. Those albums didn't get a whole lot of traction. Just saying, like, yeah, you're the big independent label, but what does that mean if the big bands that you have on your label can't really do much in terms of, you know, big numbers? I'm just saying. Then there's Rings of Saturn, and I don't care much for this band. I never got into them aside from that one song with the Macrocosm. That's like, you know, that's good. There's a whole bunch of, you know, Guitar Hero, Clone Hero stuff revolving that around that song, which is, you know, fun and good. Aside from that, though, yeah, not a big fan of the whole Death Wank stuff that this band is known for. So I can't really root for anyone here. I mean, it would suck if Lucas Mann is found out that he was, you know, trying to pull one over on the label and trying to, you know, get something out of them for whatever reason. But I don't really have a side in this fight. Basically, it's, you know, two people I don't care for having a pissy fit at each other. So, you know what? Fight away. Do we really need music labels in 2021 nowadays? I don't think we do.
I mean, that's certainly an interesting conclusion to draw from all this. I'm still just waiting on what the exact nature of the threats in question are and the baseless demands. Who knows? Maybe that was a typo. Maybe he was demanding less bass or something. Don't ask me what that means. It's Lucas Mann. The man makes no sense.
How could there be less bass in this band?
I'm sure they would find a way. It's friggin' Rings of Saturn. You know how they are. Friggin' obnoxious as all hell.
I wonder if this will be the third time that somebody got up the label due to them fucking around and find out.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Century Media, are we going to get any official word on that or what?
NDAs are a bitch and a half, aren't they?
And how. But anyway, we'll of course return to that if the situation develops any further. But now on to everyone's favorite musical headache, the most important night in movies. Wait, shit, that was last week. The most important night in music, the Grammy Awards, which, yeah, I think we already made all the ratings jokes, so I don't know what other jokes we can make. But they are in the news again because of yet another decision that they've made in the hopes of not pissing off, you know, the music sphere and big name artists like The Weeknd, who even after this most recent concession is still boycotting the ceremony that he described as, quote, a plague. It very, very precise choice of words, Mr. Abel. Apparently for this new announcement, they are going to eliminate almost all of the quote-unquote secret nominating committees that are usually the ones that make the final decisions about the artists or recordings that get nominated in a lot of categories, including the major four, the big four, big four, that's confusing wording, you know, metal guy and everything, those being the album, song, record of the year, and best new artist. Apparently, these committees have never been, you know, publicly named or revealed. They're mostly just, like, unnamed industry executives and experts who have been making a lot of behind-the-scenes decisions since around 1989. They didn't start making decisions on the Big Four until 1995. But, you know, obviously this created, like, huge headaches because it definitely feels like the only way The Weeknd would not get a nomination was if there was some invisible secret party making bullshit-ass decisions. Unfortunately, these committees are going to remain in place for the craft categories like producer, packaging, and liner notes. But overall, their presence is going to be like greatly diminished come the next round. Yeah, they even got called out. Hell, do you remember when they ousted the president and CEO, Deborah Dugan, that one year?
Oh, I remember quite well.
Yep, we all remember that.
Apparently, there was like some implications of the secret committees in that as well. including some other changes, among other changes that are probably more incidental, a reduction in the number of categories that a voter may vote, two Grammy Award category additions, and others. So, yeah, when it comes to the basic, you know, the actual nomination process, with the committees now gone, those categories will, you know, be handled by the actual voting body of the Academy. And, you know, they're going to go through a requalification process by the end of 2021, quote, to ensure that the voting body is actively engaged in music creation. Which, you know, every year you hear about, like, these changes to how the industry is going to handle themselves for the nomination and the voting process. And every year my reaction is pretty much always the same. Sure, Jan. I'm just not sure what other response you can really have, because you still know something's going to be fucky. There always is.
Look on the bright side. They're adding two new categories. Best Global Music Performance and Best Musica Urbana Album, which means two more awards for the premiere ceremony that's going to get more viewers than the actual variety show that airs on CBS.
Man, total Grammy number up to 86. In other words,
yeah.
That's a lot of nominations.
Which means we're going to get 77 awards handed out before the main telecast now. Isn't that fun, kids?
Like a heart attack.
And best global music performance, like, what's that mean? That this means, like, just music around the world or something?
It's a catch-all. I mean, come on. I mean, they're only putting in, you know, five Latin category awards. Clearly, we can throw one in there for the whole world, because that makes sense.
I got a feeling that they might add some K-pop in there, meaning the you know what crowd is gonna be back saying they should. Well, yeah.
Oh yeah, that reminds me. The BTS meal comes out later this month.
Oh yeah.
That doesn't have anything to do with anything, but you know.
it's food. We like food.
Yes, we do. We're foodies around here. But don't expect The Weeknd to be playing ice with the Grammys anytime soon, because he's still very adamant that they can fuck off. Which,
pretty much.
They can fuck off with this shit. Because, you know, when your ousted CEO is proven right, that makes y'all look real weak.
But the question remains, will any of this help with their future ratings? And the answer is no.
No.
Hell no!
Because, as we all know, the Academy Awards killed it. And by it, I mean televised award shows forever, because nobody cares anymore.
Nobody gives a shit anymore.
Personally speaking, I think it was the Chadwick Boseman NFT. You're not recovering from that.
Yeah, that too.
Bastards. But so they're going to be unveiling a more fuller list of the rule book for 2022 by later this month, even naming a new president and CEO, so good luck with that. So we shall tune back in to see how this all plays out later, assuming they even do a actual proper ceremony next year.
And if they do it, we gotta break in. We gotta do the whole mission again. We gotta.
It's Mission Impossible, Grammys edition.
Yeah.
But,
None of us need Tom Cruise in this thing. Because we'd be scared shitless.
I gotta watch those movies someday. But, with that out of the way, that finishes the news, and now we can dive into the last little bits here. Of course, we have the new album releases for the week of May 7th, 2021. Starting at the top, we have the newest album from Young Boy Never Broke Again with Sincerely Cantrell. There's a new album from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones with When Got Was Great. From the pop duo Ally and AJ. Remember the good old days of a 2000s Disney? I'm not sure why you would. But their new album, A Touch of the Beat, gets you up on your feet, gets you out, and then into the sun.
That is a...
Is that a limerick or something? What the hell?
That's still shorter than a friggin' Bring Me the Horizon album title. I still haven't forgot about that one.
It belongs, I guess, a Kai anime title.
Ugh.
Of course, from BB Rexha, we have their newest album, Better Mistakes. And last, and maybe least, depending on your perspective, the newest album from Weezer with Van Weezer.
Gen Xer, AJR, yeah. Don't forget it.
Yeah. And also, just to add this up, whatever that Top Dog thing that's going to be released this week, because we don't know what's going to be, because something is about to happen, I don't know what. Is it a single? Is it an album? Or is it an album? But who knows?
Maybe it'll just be a sandwich. You never know.
Top Dog sandwiches.
Anyway, with that out of the way, it is now time to clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, Aura of Azure, where I just talk about movies that I feel like watching, like bad 2000s. CG space sci-fi movies.
Yeah.
Planet Bob. Ugh. What a way to piss out Fox.
God, how is that even a thing? Anyway.
Joss Whedon. I blame Joss Whedon.
Oh, God. You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, he wrote that. Well, co-wrote that.
Anyways, Mark, what about you?
As usual, on Twitter, I'm at Tiffany Media, where I do nothing on there sometimes, or I don't know. I'm looking at what I was review for the Apple Roundup next meeting coming up. And speaking of which, since you mentioned my worst enemy having an album out last month, you missed another one.
Yeah. Anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, etc. at Rob Barracuda. Email me, roberts@sewerresolution.com for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. You can subscribe to the podcast, Google Play, iTunes. Audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video usually goes up by the weekend on the official YouTube channel. So subscribe, hit the bell tab so you can be officially notified when stuff goes up there. Follow us on Twitter, @SewerReso. Like us on Facebook. Be sure to visit us, you know, sewerresolution.com, you know, written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, all that good stuff. Be sure to jump into our Discord chat for, you know, shenanigans and nonsense. And, of course, a shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, that'll about do it for this week. We'll, of course, be back next week with more of the usual nonsense and even the imminent album roundup. You know, we'll be recording that next week, so keep an ear out for that. So, until next time. Seriously, God Danzig, just shut up.
Todd, I blame you for ruining human body community for me. Damn it.
Tasty.